Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Paul Wearson, your host for today, and thank you for listening and joining us today. We have a big variety in our program today. Our first guest is Leanne Harder, Story County Outreach and Special Projects Manager, and she's here with the monthly report of what's happening in the county. Later in the program, we'll hear from Pat Brooks telling us about the great race he and his wife Mary made across China in 1997. And finally, Jennifer Knox and Tyler Harms will be here on hand with the great blue heron, ending the year of Iowa Bird of Mouth, the crowdsourced poetry project focusing on different Iowa birds each month. And now, for Leanne Harder, thanks for coming over from Nevada today to tell us what we need to be aware of in Story County in the month of August.
Thanks for having me. I want to begin by introducing Rachel Wilson, our intern at Story County.
And she's from Iowa State.
Yes,
she is. And will graduate in May.
Yes.
Good.
And we've been very fortunate to have her. It's been hopefully a great learning experience for her, too, the past few months with Story County. I'm going to start out by inviting people to visit our website, which is www.storycountyiowa.gov. We want you to look at it, but we also want your feedback, because what you see right now probably is not what you'll see in a few months. We've taken on a project to totally redesign our website, make it much more user-friendly, make it much more easier for folks to use. So we have a survey out there. So go to that website I said earlier, which I hope you'll have on your website, and click on the top where there's a big red button and take the survey. It's only 5 or 6 questions. We're asking what you like about our website, what you don't, what can we do to help you on the service end of things. It's also in paper format for those of you listening right now, but not at a computer, but heading to City Hall or a library throughout Story County. You can grab a survey there, fill it out, put in the envelope, and we'll get it back. And hopefully, in the end, we have a design, a website design that really meets everyone's needs. That is going on right now through the end of the month. One really, really exciting thing we have, for those of you that travel between Ames and Nevada, 600th Avenue. And I don't know if you go east at all to Nevada. That was a gravel road. It was a very highly traveled road. It's north and south between US 30 and Lincoln Way, just right by the co-op over there. That's now paved. And so the dust, the white dust you saw for years and years as trucks went up and down, is gone. And it's back open to the public. That and our next very large paving project that Story County is undertaking is Grant Avenue. And unfortunately for those that go to the Gilbert School District, it's not open yet. It's between 190th and the city of Gilbert, that really short span of gravel that seems to be a speedway for Story County. It's going to be paved too. But that will be open hopefully by October. That will be a great addition to have, though, have that paved and increase the safety for students and adults alike going back and forth between Ames and Gilbert. I'm going to switch kind of gears a little bit and go to some of our wellness programs at Story County. We have 2 blood drives coming up. We've been partnering with the American Red Cross over the past few years to host blood drives. We've had some very successful blood drives, and they are open to the public. They're just not for Story County employees. Our next 2 are coming up at the end of August, end of this month. There's 1 in Nevada, and then there's 1 in Ames, and I'll get the information to post on your website, too. But these are very special ones for Story County. They are in honor of Nora Scott, and Nora is the daughter of one of Story County's employees, one of our sheriff's deputies. Nora was diagnosed with leukemia 2 weeks after her 2nd birthday, and she has already had over more than a dozen blood and platelet transfusions. And with her continual fight, she'll probably need more. And so we reached out and hope that her story and her fight will encourage people to come give blood. I forget what the statistic is, three lives you save with one donation. Potentially 3 lives you save with one donation. So that's Thursday, August 24th, and Friday, August 25th, both times 11:30 to 5. You can call either me or Rachel, and we can get you signed up, too. I'll give my number at the end. Then the treasurer, going to switch gears again, wants to remind everyone that taxes are going to be due, property taxes. Yeah, their tax statements probably went out in the mail yesterday. And so check your mailboxes in the next couple days. The first half property taxes are due by September 30th. So for those of you that pay in person, you can be go to the treasurer's office in Nevada. You can pay online, or they can be mailed, of course, too. And if you want to pay online, it's www.iowatreasurers.org. And then upcoming for Community Services Department through Story County, there's a mental health expo. It's called An Evening of Hope and Healing. It'll be held Tuesday, September 19th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Iowa State Memorial Union Sunroom. There'll be vendors present, and it's free and open to the public. Really continuing to get the message out that mental health is a true issue with which we all must deal. And so this is an opportunity to learn more and continue that dialogue. Then animal control really wants us to get the message out that the animal shelter on Lincoln Way in Nevada is full of animals. And those animals are fantastic animals. They're wonderful dogs, carrying kittens and cats for adoption, and they need to be adopted. They need to find their forever homes. And again, like Sue McCaskey, our animal shelter, said, they are ready to be adopted. So visit the animal shelter. They have a great Facebook page where you can see all the pictures of the dogs and cats they have on our website, or just stop by too. Their hours are published on our website. And then really exciting news from Story County Conservation. We all know what's happening at the Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor out at the Iowa State Research Park. A very large park that will be a kind of a showcase for water quality and what you can do right along with development. A contract has been signed, and we will really begin to start seeing things happening out at the research park for that property. It'll begin in the fall and really should be completed next spring. It's a $4.5 million project. As I said, a showcase, but really something that Story County and all the residents need to go look and watch and see what can be done right. And then we also have signed a contract with the Department of Natural Resources to start to do some work at Hickory Grove Lake. Hickory Grove is really our gem of Story County for our conservation department. What will be happening over the next few years, that lake will be drawn down, the water will be removed, and we're going to stabilize, do shoreline armoring. It's a three-phase project. It'll be really just partial lake dredging, refilling, and then, really important, fish restocking. So get a nice culture of fish there, nice opportunities for recreation. There's a public meeting to discuss what will be happening with that lake renovation, and that will be at Hickory Grove on September 12th. Story County Conservation online at storycountyconservation.org. has some more details. So in a nutshell, that is a lot that's happening at Story County. Again, our website is www.storycountyiowa.gov, and go there, check out our website refresh survey. My phone number is 515-382-7247, and email is lhart, as in Tom, E-R, at storycountyiowa.org. Too many emails to say today, websites today. That's lharter at storycountyiowa.gov. Yeah, I've got myself screwed up too. But call me with any questions.
First of all, you've reminded me that taxes are coming due. I hadn't thought about that again. Thanks for ruining my morning.
You're welcome. I loved it. I mean, unfortunately, we're on radio, so you could not see Paul's reaction when I reminded him that taxes are due.
No. Now, getting back to Hickory Grove, when is that going to be done? Next season?
It's a multi-year project.
Okay.
It'll be starting this fall. Might be even be out there. It's actually already underway. It's been going on doing some water quality practices, really setting the stage for this very large, large, important project.
When do they drain the lake?
I think it's going to be the next couple of years.
So if I come out with my boat and suddenly it's all mud, then
you might
have to turn back.
Yeah, you might want to just watch the website. They're using, they being conservation, are using a lot of tools to keep the public aware. They're using story maps, which really tells a story in a map format, and they'll have pictures there so you could go online and see, oh, there's no water out there right now.
So I wouldn't make the trip. I just went to. Now, I also wanted to talk a little bit about this survey. Is that just starting now or has it been ongoing?
It's been on for about 2 weeks. We released it, sent it paper format last week to the city halls and libraries. I am so pleased with the feedback we're getting. We get, Rachel, what, 2 to 3, maybe 5 surveys a day. Rachel's been responsible for entering everything and making sure we're getting everything into our system and we can capture all the comments.
Isn't it nice to have an intern to do all that work? And Rachel, how are you surviving all this tension and pressure? Is it okay?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm handling it.
And you're impressed by the surveys too.
Huh? Yeah, there's been a lot of positive feedback and then also some good suggestions for what we should do.
Yes. You know, that's sort of an open-ended question you're asking. People mm-hmm. can type in a paragraph if they want. Is
yeah.
that right?
Well, we might have some space limitations. I mean, you might get to too many characters, kind of like a Twitter.
Okay, so
tweet,
you don't want them to go on and on for pages and pages.
No, but we have a question where we just want them to rate us on a scale, ease of use, and really one of the number one criticisms we're hearing, which I wholeheartedly agree with, too many clicks to get where we need. And that's not user-friendly, and that's not providing the service we should be doing.
So they're really saying on the website, here's my trouble. Finding out what I need to find out from the county.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly.
You might also highlight this blood drive and the background for it. The young girl who's got this need for transfusions. Mm-hmm. When is the blood drive and where will they go?
Blood drive will be August 24th and 25th. August 24th will be at the Human Services Center here in Ames, which is on Kellogg Avenue. And I've got posters I'll send over to that, if you don't mind putting them on and helping us publicize it. Then Friday, August 25th, it's over at the administration building, which is the former courthouse in Nevada, 906th Street. Both days are 11:30 to 5. Of course, we will take walk-ins, too. If you just happen to be over there getting ready to pay your taxes and you've already given blood once, you want to give blood again. So
you'll
to
be
speak,
giving blood in more than one
yep,
way.
Exactly. you're with me. But it is, and we'll have, blood drives have always been important for Story County, but this is, it's making it very more important in honor of Nora.
So we've had Leanne Harder here today from the county. And Leanne, once again, say your website so that people can respond. All the things she's been talking about are readily available at this website. Hit it, Leanne.
I'll get it right, www.storycountyiowa.gov.
We got it right. And welcome also to Rachel, her wonderful intern, who will be graduating from Iowa State next May. And she's had a great experience with the county. And welcome to both of them. Thanks for your update, Leanne. Now, going into our next segment, one of my favorite programs on KHOI is Tom Beal's wonderful show of soundtracks from the movies. And we're going to play the soundtrack, or the overture for Around the World in 80 Days. It was a great film back in the 60s where Phineas Fogg traveled around all over the world on a great race. And that's going to open our segment coming up next about a big race in a Buick. So come on, let's play Around the World in 80 Days. Well, that was Around the World in 80 Days, the wonderful theme from the movie of the 60s, and you'll find out in a minute why we played that. This is KHOI Community Radio. We've actually just heard from Leanne Harder, the Story County Outreach and Special Projects Manager, telling us all we need to know about what's going on in Story County in August. I'm your host today, Paul Wearson, and I'm a proud driver of a 1996 Buick. So it gives me special pleasure to bring you Pat Brooks today as our guest, who's been driving and restoring vintage Buicks since 1974. And we're inspired by a recent program we had about the trip Brian McNamara and Lee Kilmer took from Story City to Fairbanks, Alaska, in their Model T Ford pickups. Well, we asked Pat to tell us about his two rallies in his 1949 Buick Woody. One across China in 1997 and one around the world in 2000. Welcome, Pat.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, it's going to be fun to talk about all this. I understand you were in Marshalltown originally. Is that right?
Right. I lived in Marshalltown for 35, 36 years, and then we moved here to Ames because we have a daughter and three grandchildren and son-in-law here. So I'm now retired, and it's been a great life.
Well, now, you were a lawyer, is that correct?
I was, right.
And you also have great mechanical skills. You restore vintage cars, is that right?
Well, I did. For many years, I would buy cars that were oftentimes in poor repair and needed to be worked on, and I'd restore them. I had a lot of parts. For years, I would buy brand-new parts at Buick dealers. I'd clean out their parts bins, the old parts that they were going to take to the dump. Literally, and I would buy them for $100 and load up everything I could get in my trailer and my car and take them back. So I had a lot of parts. And
now, why were you partial to Buicks? Now, I'm kind of partial to Buicks, too. What is it about Buicks?
Well, Buick has a tremendously fine reputation for mechanical performance and ruggedness, and they kept the straight 8 engine until the last series it had, that was 1953, and they had that engine perfected, and it was a wonderful engine, and the mechanics were great, and they stayed on the road for years, and many of the manufacturers were constantly making changes in an effort to save money, and Buick just built it right to begin with and held it that way.
Well, yes, my 1996 Buick has never stranded me on the road. And, you know, my neighbor boy is at Iowa State. He's a sophomore. And it occurs to me that my car is the same age he is. And so it's still on the road. So I've got to say that my Buick engine has really lasted, too. Now, this Woody, explain what a Woody is for those of us who are younger.
Well, a Woody is a cargo vehicle. And so it's built on the convertible frame, which is traditionally a heavier frame, and has heavier suspension and was made for rugged work. And it's a vehicle that you can fold the seats down in and have a lot of cargo space, and yet it has an attractive appearance because of the wood that's hung on the outside. Now, early Woodies, the body was basically all wood. Now, in 1949, they changed that, and the wood was actually screwed to the sheet metal, and the body became a unified body and was much sturdier and more stable.
So you rebuilt the Woody. Now, how did you hear about this China thing?
Well, I was reading a car magazine that I subscribed to, actually a newspaper, and there was about a two tiny little paragraph article about this fellow in London who was going to organize this Peking to Paris rally. And so I wanted to do that, and I called him and talked to him and got signed up, and Buick came on board to sponsor me, and Popular Mechanics and Steel Rubber Products and a number of other sponsors. And so I decided to do it, and it worked out quite well. Now, we actually just drove from Beijing, which is known as Peking before the revolution, and
Where is Beijing in terms of the continent? There are other countries.
Beijing is in Lower Mongolia. This is actually northern China, and it's about 120 miles from the coast. And so we started at the Great Wall of China. The Great Wall of China is the tourist area, what people call the Great Wall, is actually just outside of Beijing. And so we started there, and we headed – west, and we drove in a bit of a southwesterly direction, and we drove to the border of Tibet for Buick. Now, Buick wanted us to do this and hired us under contract to do this, and my job was to prepare the car and get it shipped to China and take care of all the details and show up there with the car to meet the president of the Buick Corporation at the Great Wall of China with a lot of executives and start this rally. It was quite an undertaking.
Well, how many cars were involved in the rally?
Well, I believe it was something like 70 or 80 on this particular rally. And as I say, we drove to the border of Tibet. Now, the reason Buick wanted us to do this was in 1997, which is when this occurred, Buick opened its factory in China. And it's making Buicks even today in China. And indeed, they sell more Buicks in China and Asia than they do the entire United States.
Is that right?
That's right. It's a huge operation. And Buick is a status car in China because many of the communist rulers and even the pre-communist rulers had Buicks. And they're in museums over there, Chinese museums. You will find a 1940 Buick.
Is that right?
It was driven by the people who were in charge of China's government before the revolution, actually.
Well, now, when you got out there on the road in China, out in the more hinterland area when you were driving, what did you encounter? There were a lot of villages and long stretches that just open road, I suppose.
Well, you have to realize that China was a country which lived in isolationism for many, many, many years. And so we drove through these tiny villages, and people there might have seen a picture of a European, but they'd never seen a European. Wow. And they wanted to reach through the window of your car and touch your hair and touch your skin. And they wanted to touch your car, and they wanted to talk to you. And they wanted to actually, frankly, to make friends with you so that they could come to the United States. And they openly talked about that.
Is that right?
And you'd pull into a tiny village, and the people you could speak to almost always were children who were taking English in school, and they were the translators. And many of these were very small children, but they would translate for the adults and for us. And it was a very interesting experience. Now, the towns there, which we would call big towns, were just oftentimes small by their standards. There'd be 100,000 people. And we would come into town, and we were on kind of the main thoroughfare. And we could look ahead and see the downtown, and people were standing literally elbow to elbow, crammed in there to see us. And the organizers of the rally cautioned us and said, when you get in there, don't stop. Because if you stop, the people will pack around your car so tightly that you won't be able to move forward without running over them. So you have to keep moving, because if you keep moving, they won't get packed in around you, and they are more apt to move out of your way. And that's what we had to do. And so it was, the people were tremendously interested in Europeans and in our cars and us and coming to the United States.
So when you drove down those streets in those towns, you were like Dwight Eisenhower in the victory parade in New York City after World War II.
Exactly.
Just a big motorcade. Now, when you got out into the countryside, the condition of the roads, were they paved or were they mostly gravel?
Well, on the roads were all these homemade little carts people had made out of little engines, like what we would see at a farm auction or a farm show, a little engine from the 1900s, 19-teens made these little farm engines. And they'd make these little homemade vehicles, and they were going down the road, and there were donkeys and horses and people on bikes and all kinds of things, so you had to be very careful. And the roads were in very poor condition. They were not made for modern vehicles or anything that would be high speed. And so there was tremendous construction. There was construction going on everywhere. And just to kind of transition from this to the Around the World trip, when we went back 3 years later for the Around the World, they had built new roads almost everywhere, and they built brand new gas stations the entire length of China. And I'm talking again about gas stations that are as big as any truck stop here in town.
Talking about what time period? How many years?
Only 3 years.
3 years, all this construction happened, so it presented an entirely different environment when right. you came through the second time.
That's right.
A marvelous transition yeah. in a short time.
We would stop to get gasoline the second trip in the around the world, which was 2000. The Peking to Paris was 1997. We would stop at these huge gas stations, and attractive young Chinese girls in short skirts would come out with hot tea for you, wash your windshield, check your oil, and put the gasoline in the gas tank for you. It was like going back to the 1940s.
Full-service gas station in every sense of the word.
Absolutely.
On your first trip, was there enough gas at critical points to keep you going without, you know, before all that construction happened?
Well, gas was a real problem in 1987 because we had to find it along the way. And many times we actually found it in mud huts and very primitive circumstances, and the locals would see us coming through, and they would want to sell us the gas, and so they put water in it. They stretched it.
They diluted the gasoline.
Well, they were making money, and so that was a problem. You had to be very careful, and so we had trouble getting gas. Now, in some places, there was simply not enough gas for all of the cars we had, and so the organizers in several times brought in these great big gasoline tankers, and we gassed straight from the tankers. And that was good gas.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're talking about 70 cars in this caravan.
Yeah, approximately.
Now, were they all vintage Buicks or with various years or models? Or?
Well, they were. They were older cars, and I think the newest one I think you could have, and again, this has been 20 years ago that I did this, was like 1960-something. But the oldest car around the world, for example, was a 1914 Rolls-Royce, and it didn't even make it out of England. We started in London and headed west towards Istanbul, and it didn't even make it. But there were all lots of cars, and they were in different classes, and all the years were represented, so there was a mix of cars.
So during the China trip in 97, now, was there a moment? What's the worst thing that happened? I always ask people, what was the worst thing that happened?
Well, the worst thing that happened was we got a load of bad gas near the border of Tibet, actually right on the border of Tibet. We slept that night in a sheep and goat pasture among a herd of sheep and goats, and we couldn't get the car started the next morning because the gasoline had been so badly watered. Mm-hmm. Now, it was one of those deals where if your engine was hot, as we would say, the head was hot, where the explosion really starts, you could tolerate. The engine would tolerate it. But when the engine was cold, it just had enough water in it that you couldn't get the engine to run. And we weren't the only ones who had problems with that. But we were hired by Buick to go across China so they would have a presence in this rally and be visible to the people and generate all this publicity in the Chinese press. And we were able to get that done because we did make it to the border of Tibet.
And so I'm sure there were maintenance people along with parts and all this sort of thing.
Okay,
so.
Now that's a really interesting issue because many of these people were not, they were wealthy foreigners, basically, and they took a mechanic with them.
Oh, they did.
They took the mechanic that had worked on the car, and the mechanic's way was paid and his fees were paid and everything, so he had a free trip, and he may not have gotten a salary. I never met one that did have a salary, but they were riding with the owners. Now, you have to realize that these mechanics had varying degrees of skills out in the wilderness.
Okay.
If they were in their garage, they were fine. But problem solving out in the middle of nowhere without all of the resources that we would have at home was another matter. And some of them were very ingenious. And they were able to enlist the help of local Chinese people in little tiny workshops and mud huts that were welding. And I helped on some occasions with various projects and this kind of thing. But the rally people had two trouble trucks, what we called trouble trucks, and they would help you. And the rules said they could help you for up to 10 minutes. Now, they'd help you longer than that if somebody else didn't need help. But yeah. If there were other people who needed help, they were going to go help them. And so very interestingly, by the end of the rally, it was obvious which mechanics were ingenious and resourceful and could keep the cars running. And so there was a competition between the owners of these cars to hire other people's mechanics away from them for the next rally.
Right.
Because their mechanic wasn't very good, but this guy's was.
So it really was a merit-based system certain mechanics had status based on actual skills.
That's right.
Now, what was your destination on this trip?
Well, the destination on this trip was really for us ended up being the border of Tibet, but the rally went on to Paris, and we didn't take that leg. We were having car problems as well, so that's where that ended. But the on the around the world, we started in London, and we then ended in London, and we crossed all of Europe and Asia and Alaska and North America and Northern Africa. And
well, I want to hear a lot more about that. Right now, this is local KHOI radio, Story City, Ames, and surrounding area. We've been talking with Pat Brooks, telling us about the experiences in the auto rally from Beijing and the Great Wall in China to Tibet. But that was just the beginning for them. Now, the second rally was the Around the World in 80 Days for the Bicentennial in 2000. Is that what they called it, Around the World?
Around the World in 80 Days Motor Marathon.
I'm so glad we played that theme now.
Well, I was very impressed with that.
And you have pretty good work. Huh?
That's right. Put in for a race.
Good choices. Well, tell us about that Around the World trip. That's much more of a challenge, I suppose.
Yeah, that was the premier automobile event of the Millennium Celebration. And it started in London on May 1st, 2000, and 102 cars left the starting line. And there were really three rallies within a single rally. The first leg ended in Istanbul. People had actually paid to go that far, and then they went home. And so we lost about 20 or 25 cars in Istanbul. And then the next leg ended in Beijing, and Peking, as it is sometimes called. And that is a place where we again lost 20 or 25 cars. People had paid to go that far. Now, that was important because the remaining 42 cars that remained were going to board an Antonov, which is the largest military transport plane in the world. And when the Soviet Union broke down, they sold a lot of military hardware to raise money. And they sold some of these Antonovs, and a group of investors in London bought an Antonov and were doing all these special projects, including transporting 42 of our cars around the world over the oceans. And so there were a group of us who had paid to go on the plane, and if we made it to Beijing, and some people didn't make it, then we could get on the plane. Now, the people who didn't make it, their slots were filled by people who hadn't gotten signed up soon enough, but had indicated they would pay, and then they would take the place of those people who fell out. And so we packed 42 cars.
And you were in that group.
Oh, yes.
We made it.
We were determined to get to Beijing and get on the Antonov, and we did. In fact, just to, so I don't forget it, this is very important. We did make it all the way under our own power, and we won a gold medal.
You did.
In the rally, yes. So in any event, they packed you on to the Antonov, and they put four of the organizers' vehicles on the Antonov as well, and these included the two trouble trucks.
So this is just a vast capacity, large deck in this plane, and you could put 40 cars in there?
You could actually put 46, I think it was 46 cars with the organizers' vehicles. Now, when you drove the cars in through the tail, and the tail hydraulically came up. Mm-hmm. So it was at a 90-degree angle, and you drove the cars on, and they were parked in several levels. I mean, this plane is huge. And then to dislodge these cars, get rid of them, the front end came up where the pilot sat, and it came at a 90-degree angle, and we drove then down through the front end.
So you drove in the back end, drove out the front end. I would really like to see a picture. Too bad we're on radio here, but I'd like to see that massive plane. And that when you flew out of there, where did you fly to then?
Well, we flew to Anchorage. Mm-hmm. The cars were transported to Anchorage, and from Anchorage then we rallied Alaska, northern Canada, northern United States, and we drove to New York, New Jersey. And from there, we then flew to northern Africa and did the Sahara and Morocco. And not to get ahead of the story here, but then we drove the Straits of Gibraltar, and when we got into Spain. Now, we hadn't driven Spain on the first part of the trip, so that was new territory. And then we went back through France and went back to London.
Well, here's a question, Pat. Who had the best roads?
Well, if there's any question, the best roads were in North America. When you get, this is a very interesting observation that I made, and I think it's right. It seemed right to me at the time. When you in Asia, when you got within 100 miles of the border of the country, okay, the roads just went to nothing.
Is that correct? Wow.
Well, I'm sure there are modern roads there now that's not true of. But we didn't stay on interstates, and we didn't stay on, you know, we were on the older roads, but they just went terrible. And the reason what I finally figured out was that these countries had spent so much time over the years invading each other that they didn't want to provide a safe and fast entry route into the country with these roads. So the first 100 miles or so, you were driving under terrible conditions, and that gave the country time to react if somebody invaded them. Now, that's just the only thing I can tell you, but that's the way it was.
Wow. That's very interesting observation. In fact, so much of what you've discussed today is a revelation to me in terms of not only what happened in China and what that was such a tour. I can't believe all that construction went on in 3 years. Must have been a crash program. Look at the vast change in on-the-road convenience and gas stations and the road surface. Amazing.
China had then and still has today the largest cash reserves of any country in the world. They are rich. There is tremendous wealth being generated in Asia. And we as Americans are often hear our politicians say we're the wealthiest country in the world. Well, we're the biggest debtor country in the world. Mm-hmm. And the money and the resources and the assets and the construction in those other parts of the world is just beyond our comprehension almost, really. And so when I came home from Peking to Paris, I was reading a business magazine, and it said that something like 89% or almost 90% of all the high-rise cranes in the world were in China. And see, when they build these big buildings and have all these big projects, they rent these huge cranes from international companies, and they provide operators and maintenance and whatnot so that they can lift all these big loads and all of that. And almost all of them in the world were located in China doing this construction we're talking about. Now, I'd seen this construction, and I'd seen these high-rise cranes, but I didn't realize that until I got home and read about it.
Well, you know, that's the amazing thing about your whole story. The contrast you saw in just 3 years in China. And what an experience you had. Now, who sponsored that Around the World rally?
Well, there was an organizer in London. And he himself had been a rally driver, and he organized a company to do these rallies for those of us who were not professionals and who didn't have professional rally cars and wanted to drive our antique cars and go on a great adventure. And so he organizes these. In fact, they're still being you can still go on them, but 9/11 changed a lot. You know, we felt perfectly safe driving through all of these countries where today we would not even venture. At one point, we were told by the organizers, we were 20 miles from the border of Afghanistan. And that puts it in perspective.
Oh, yes, of course. So at no time did you feel unsafe due to the political situation?
No, we didn't. People were so friendly and so welcoming and wanted to see the cars and have their pictures taken with the cars and talk to us. And as I said earlier, they wanted to talk about coming to the United States. And so... people were very, very good to us. And the governments were good to us. They provided security at night and for the parking lots. And in China particularly, there are so many eyes. I came to say in China there are so many eyes that if you do something wrong, the government's going to find out about it. And people were very well behaved. Now, if a police officer was around and gave them a direction, they followed it. But if they were in a hotel parking lot or in a city and a security officer gave them direction, they might not follow it.
Is that right?
And there was a fight a few times between these people. But if a police officer told you something, you did it.
And so really, you were exposed to a variety of cultures. Now, your wife, Mary, went along too. How did she enjoy that?
Well, she was my navigator. And I drove the entire way from London to Beijing. And then in North America, she took over the wheel from time to time. But she was a wonderful, wonderful navigator, and she really enjoys maps. And so she spent hours and hours and hours reviewing maps and plotting out the route. And then as we drove, she was telling me, you know, how to drive and she always does anyway. And
that was a friendly backseat driver.
Oh, yeah. Well, now let's talk about that for a second. That's very interesting. You have to realize this was a rally, and so we had to get to checkpoints and meet various timetables. And it was very stressful. And this was before electronic navigation like you have in your car today. And so you had to follow a map. And you had to figure out the way, and you'd go to a intersection, and there might be no sign at all, and you'd have to figure out which way to turn on the Y, and if it went two ways, which way do you go? And my wife was very good about that, and we resolved those, but there were actually fist fights in the cars between these people.
Is that right?
That's right, because they couldn't figure out which way to go, and the stress was tremendous, and they decided after the trip started they didn't like each other. They should have decided that before the trip started.
Nothing is more stressful than being in an automobile with somebody when there's an argument about where to go.
That's right. As Yogi Berra said, when you get to the Y in the road, take it. the question was, which way do you go?
That sounds like Yogi Berra. Well, you know, Pat, it's been delightful. We could talk all morning. That's been fascinating. I am just really highly respectful of what you've accomplished. You did a lot of things that really were, well, you were facing the unknown, and it was a challenge. And thanks to you and your wonderful Buick and your wonderful wife, Mary, for getting you through all this stuff. This is Local Talk on Community Radio, KHOI. We've been talking with the wonderful Pat Brooks, telling us about his overseas rallies he and his wife, Mary, took in their 1949 Buick. And closing out the show today, we've got the final bird in our year-long poetry celebration of Iowa Bird of Mouth, presented by Jennifer Knox, curator of the Outsourced Poetry Project. She teaches at Iowa State University. And we have Tyler Harms, director of Iowa Young Birders. Thanks for coming in today, Jennifer and Tyler.
Well, thanks for having us.
What is the spotlight bird in August? This is the last bird.
This is the last bird. It's the great blue heron.
The great blue heron. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that great blue heron.
Well, it's a pretty common bird, which is a good thing, because they weren't always common. They were actually one bird, well, like many other birds that were persecuted historically, primarily for their plumes. If you can remember the days of the big, pretty hats with all of the feathers, great blue herons
the
were.
The great blue heron were one of the most desirable feathers to have in your hat.
Indeed, yes. Oh. And so they're actually a really interesting conservation success story now that they are so common. They're one of my favorite birds. I mean, they're big, they're tall.
How big are they?
Oh, gosh, they're, you know, 3 or 4 feet tall, at least, if
really?
They stand with their neck outstretched and they're
do they
stand
get aggressive
nice and
in defending their territory? And
they can, yeah, but they're not as territorial as some other birds. They nest in colonies, and so they'll nest in groups of upwards of 100 birds.
Is that right?
And so they don't keep an area to themselves quite like some of the other birds.
Like where a are they to be? Blackbird.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Where are they to be found in Iowa?
You can find them almost anywhere there's water. They're quite general in terms of their habitat requirements. They can be found near wetlands. They can be found on the banks of rivers, on the shores of lakes. They fish. That's how they forage. So they can be found anywhere. And they're actually a widespread bird, not just in Iowa, but elsewhere.
I am glad to hear that. I imagined they were an endangered species. What's their wingspan? It must be huge.
Oh, it's quite large. Yeah, it's probably 2 or 3 feet, I would say.
Right, and Jennifer, this is the last bird?
This is the last bird.
You might refresh us on this project. It's been going on all year.
It's been going on for 12 months. This is our 12th month. Iowa Bird of Mouth is a crowdsourced online poetry project, and anyone can contribute up to 300 words a day, no matter where you live or if you've published anything or how old you are. We've had Brownie Troops submit, and we also had Guggenheim Fellows submit to the poem. So there's a wide range of contributors, and we've had over 750 people add their words to these poems.
During the course of the year?
Over the course of the year.
Now, how many will respond each month when you have a new bird?
It depends. We had a lot of people at the beginning, of course, because it was straight out of the gate. I think probably the least amount of submissions was the ring-necked pheasant.
Huh.
And that was, I can see why, because it's a game bird.
Yeah.
It's a bird that's kept, that we keep it alive, we keep it around to hunt it.
Yeah.
So that's
interesting.
That's very
I'll
sad.
Keep that in mind for next
well, that
time.
Well, that says something. You don't write poetry about a bird you're going to kill. Is that right?
Most of the poems in that month were written about the people who kill birds.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Not by people who kill birds, but about what kind of a person would kill such a beautiful bird.
Well, I'll tell you what. Now, this is the end of the project. It was funded for a 12-month period.
It was by the Iowa Arts Council.
And everyone who looks back on this says what? Success.
I'm absolutely blown away by the success of the project, knowing that probably by the end of this month, we'll have had about 800 people,
mm-hmm.
Whether they submitted individually or they submitted something in a group. I've worked with many elementary school classrooms and groups of kids, and they just shout things out and I type it in.
So it spans all age groups, all mm-hmm. competencies,
yes,
all educational levels.
Absolutely.
It's a universal program,
mm-hmm.
and maybe it'll be repeated sometime.
Well, I'm trying to figure out now how to use all this text we have. And one of the ideas that I came up with is a series of choir pieces based on the text, because the text is open sourced and can be used free for any creative project.
Wow.
So 12 pieces for perhaps a children's choir.
Oh, yeah.
Using the text that we already have.
Well, who knows what, if you thought really expansively. Now I see you brought some text with you.
I did. I brought two verses. The heron's on a great start out of the gate. It is a favorite bird for so many people.
So this is actually verse for the current
this comes
bird,
right,
the blue
yeah,
heron.
Right out of the poem.
Well, we're just going to let you be Robert Frost. And,
well, thank you.
Yes, go ahead.
No pressure.
No pressure.
Right?
You can equal mm-hmm. Robert Frost.
Let's see,
here's
if I can
Jennifer
pull it off.
Doing Robert Frost. Go ahead.
Okay. And many people, when they submit their verses, they have titles with them. And the title for this one is Bike Ride with a Heron. I was on I-80 in Wyata, Iowa. I thought I ought to stop in Wyata and stretch my legs with a ride on my bike. So I went for a ride right beside Turkey Creek, but no turkeys as I stretched my legs with a ride on my bike. But then there beside me, right along biting me, was a great blue heron, flying down, turkey on, as I stretched my legs with a ride on my bike. We went the same pace, neither losing face by slowing or gaining, but both retaining as I stretched my legs with a ride on my bike. It was synchronicity. It was serendipity. It was fluid and grace, time and space, as I stretched my legs with a ride on my bike. I'll never forget I was an egret when I was here on Wyota's blue heron as I stretched my legs with a ride on my bike. Somebody really liked rhyming with that one. Am I pronouncing that right? Wyota?
I think so. We'll get calls if you're not. But,
good. Okay.
You know,
good.
I just thought sort of Edgar Allan Poe.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think? See that flavor there? Mm-hmm. The repetition of these words and rhymes?
It's interesting what the different birds have inspired people to do in the poems. Some inspire more rhymes than others. I remember the owl, the eastern screech owl, there was a lot of rhyming with...
is that right?
Mm-hmm. And much more than the other birds. This is another one. I think this is...
This is going to be the blue heron, too, right?
This is a blue heron, too.
Wow.
Liminality. Caught the train in Croton on Hudson, always by the stretch of my long legs in those days before life shattered, a split second before the doors slid shut. On a good day, a window seat, headphones on, New Yorker open, knitting in hands. As soon as we moved, I kept my eyes on the river's edge as I stared at the space where a lover had been. Great blue heron, like a gorgeous umbrella, alone. Feet in the earth, legs stroked by water, wings ready for air. A good day, I thought, even before I needed lucky omens to survive the collapse.
Wow. People are so introspective.
They are.
And all you've got to do is cue them with an idea.
Mm-hmm.
And do we have a recording of the blue heron, Rebecca? Now, and Marin is here as an
this
intern.
This is some singing
this
voice
is
on this
is a blue
one.
Heron. If we hear this call, I guess, that's a blue heron.
I would never think this was a bird if I heard it in the dark.
It's an interesting sound.
Yeah.
The sound is not quite as elegant as what you might expect from such an elegant-looking mm-hmm. bird.
Yeah.
It's
opposite.
Yes.
Yeah, well, thank you for playing that, Rebecca. Now, this project was fantastic. Bird of Mouth, funded throughout this past year.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had, this is terrific, Jennifer Knox, and then Tyler Harms here also today talking about the blue heron. And Jennifer read some fantastic poetry inspired online by this wonderful project. And I just really hope that you can take all this text. And it does suggest music, doesn't
music.
It?
Music.
Yeah.
Or perhaps visual art.
Yeah, visual or music. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to get back to you and see how that all turned out.
I hope to have some results within the next year.
We're going to keep in touch with Jennifer. And Tyler, how you're a birder, right?
I am.
You know all the species and what
He's
they
the brains.
Do.
I don't know if I would go that far, but I do enjoy birds.
Well, I tell you what, you're two of our more fascinating guests, and I got to find out how this turns out. It'll probably end up as an oratorio on the scale of the Messiah, you know.
Oh, boy. Again, no pressure.
And
I hope everyone submits. The poem is open. The Great Blue Heron poem is open until the 31st of August, and I hope everyone listening
gets your poem in.
One word or 300.
On the blue heron, get it in before August 31. Thank you, Tyler and Jennifer. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. I've been your host, Paul Wearson. Thank you for listening today. Now, earlier in the show, we heard from Leanne Harder, Pat Brooks. We had Jennifer Knox and Tyler Harms here, too. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and 7 p.m. here on KHOI. We're at 89.1 FM. Also, remember that you can also hear online at khoifm.org. And you can find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI is streaming live online at khoifm.org. Today's show was engineered by Rebecca Reuter. And also Marin Ellis from Ames High School, an intern here. Our theme song, as always, is Backtracking by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was the overture to the movie Around the World in 80 Days by Victor Young. Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. So if you would like to try your hand at reporting, we'll train you. Come in and join our local team here at KHOI. Now stay tuned for Democracy Now! With headline news at the top of the hour. We have morning masterpieces following at 9 a.m. And please let us know what you think. You can call us at 515-292-2878, email us at khoiradio@gmail.com, or go to the contact page of our website. That's at khoifm.org. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we will see you again on the radio.
to be three or not to be three? That, my friends, is the question with just one answer. Yes. Sam Salamone, Des Moines area's master of the Hammond B3 organ, is coming to Ames to help our station celebrate birthday number 5. And he's bringing his friends with him. So why not bring yours down to Douglas Avenue on August 12th to enjoy the scintillating sounds and ineffable cool of Sam Salamone on the street, 6 p.m., August 12th. Bring your folding chairs and we'll bring the birthday cake and lemonade. KHOI is grateful to sponsors in the business community who are making our August 12th birthday possible. The birthday sponsor of the day is the London Underground, a British pub in historic downtown Ames, serving beer, wine, and spirits. The London Underground also hosts live performances at its 202 Main Street location, on the web at theundergroundames.com. Theundergroundames.com.